This season of the Mum Break podcast is brought to you by Bathorium, Canada's favorite clean and green beauty bath products. They make all-natural bath bombs, bath soaks, bubble baths, and accessories with no artificial fragrances or toxins. And they're vegan and ethically produced. To get 15% off, go to mumbreak.ca/bath.
Welcome to the Mum Break podcast, a place where you can feel normal, get helpful information, and laugh your ass off, hopefully without peeing your pants. I'm your host, Erica, and I have two kiddos. I am not a mom expert, but I do have a zillion hours of therapy under my belt and no filter. I'm on my own journey to find happiness, and I want to help you on the way to yours.
Thank you so much for being here. I am so excited to talk to you, and I think that my audience, a bunch of moms with young kids, sex is so important, but also one of the things that they struggle with the most for a variety of reasons. So you being here is amazing. So thank you.
Happy to be talking about this. Yeah, kids are they're the boner killer, they're the orgasm killer, they're the libido killer. Anything they can wipe out in their path, they take it right down.
So accurate. It's, I never thought of it from that perspective, but it's true. They're such lovely humans, but also, yeah, they really do. Maybe before we jump into things, you can just introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about you and all the amazing things that you do, because it's quite impressive.
Thank you. So my name's Jess O'Reilly. I am a sexologist and relationship expert. I am an author. I've written 5 books. My latest is The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. And really what I'm trying to do with all of my work is get people to have more meaningful conversations and not prescribe any which way that you must have sex or must have a happy relationship. But relationships are among the most important elements to life satisfaction, to overall health. So we need to invest in them. And folks can find me on all social media, Sex with Dr. Jess, and on my podcast, the Sex with Dr. Jess podcast, which I co-host with my life partner, my husband, Brandon. And we talk about everything from emotional literacy to how to overcome resentment to anal sex and everything in between.
I love that. I was going through the list, and I think you guys really need to go check out her podcast, because just even the topics and the headings, you cover everything. And in preparation for this podcast, I mean, I could ask you anything. I'm an open book with things, but it's often things we don't think that as moms are acceptable to talk about openly. Like, as you said, happiness and with your partner is tied to life satisfaction, right? So it's, for my moms, you know what, I'm just going to jump right into things, because I asked the crew of people who are listening right now what they wanted to ask you. And honestly, it was either one thing or the other. It was purely about, I'm having trouble orgasming, I can't orgasm, help me with this, I need orgasms, to I have no libido, I don't want to have sex, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I spend the entire day running around doing a million things, and then I'm expected to have sex. Like, what the hell? So I would love to pick your brain on maybe first libido and lack of libido in moms with young kids, because it seems to be such a problem.
Yeah, when we think about libido or sexual desire, I think we really need to have a mindset shift away from the idea that it's something that occurs naturally versus something we can cultivate. So if you wait until you're in the mood for sex after homeschooling, schooling your kids, after, you know, cooking 14 meals, after doing your own work, after attending to the emotional labor we just all attend to throughout our lives, if you expect desire to occur spontaneously, it's pretty unrealistic for many of us. So there's some research suggesting that desire can be many things, but it's often divided into two buckets, spontaneous and responsive. And for most of us, we need to work on creating responsive desire, meaning I don't want to have sex, but I remember that sex felt good, whether it was for physical reasons, spiritual reasons, relational reasons, intimacy reasons. Sex was good for me. And so I'm going to do something to get myself in the mood for sex. So if you wait until you're in the mood to have sex, you'll probably never have it. But if you do the things in your life, in your relationship, in your schedule, in your, you know, the realm of health to put yourself in the mood for sex, then it becomes more possible. So first and foremost, we want people to know you're not broken. If you have no libido, no desire for sex, that's perfectly fine. I want to preface this by saying some people don't want sex. Some people have no interest in sex. Some people are asexual, meaning they don't experience sexual attraction. And that is perfectly healthy. You do not need to fix that. However, if you're in a relationship and you want to be sexual, so you're not in the mood for sex, but you want to get in the mood for sex, we can start with the emotional, the practical, the relational, and the sexual. So I like to begin with the emotional, and that is your core erotic feeling. What is the feeling that you need to experience in order to get in the mood for sex? Do you need to feel loved? Do you need to feel well-rested? Do you need to feel relaxed? Do you need to feel sexy? Do you need to feel challenged? Do you need to feel stressed? Everybody's core erotic feeling is different. So what's obvious to you may make no sense for me. And more importantly, it may be entirely not obvious to your partner. So you've got to figure out what your core erotic feeling is. And I actually do have a podcast on the core erotic feeling, and we fleshed it out with different case studies in the latest book, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. So I do recommend people spend some time on the emotional erotic connection. Once you figure out how you need to feel in order to get in the mood for sex, then it's your job, not your partner's. It's your job to create the changes in your life so that you can feel more of that feeling. So if I say I need to feel really sexy to get to be in the mood for sex, if I don't feel sexy, I'm not going to have sex. Well, it's my job to make myself feel sexy. And that's different for everybody, right? Like some people like to dress sexy. Some people like to work out. Some people like to, you know, eat a certain way. Other people like to read stories. Other people like to give back in the community. What makes you feel sexy? But you cannot put it on your partner. You can't say, oh, make me feel beautiful, and then walk around in your own life speaking disparagingly about your own body, right? It's not somebody else's job to cultivate a feeling in you. Of course, they can support you and you can show them how, and they can be a part of the process. But first, it's on us. So once you figure out your core erotic feeling, you can make some adjustments to your attitude, to your behavior, to your lifestyle, to your habits. Then we've got the sexual side. So why don't you want sex? Is it because you're exhausted? Is it because you're feeling resentful of your partner, which is more of a relational issue to start with? Is it because, honestly, sex doesn't feel that good for you? Maybe your partner's not giving you what you want. So there's so many layers. It's not this quick fix, but can you explore your own body? Can you use a toy? Can you fantasize? Can you read stories to figure out what really works for you to arouse you, to get you off, to bring you to orgasm, whatever you want to get out of sex? Because not everybody cares about orgasm. Some people do, some people don't. So then we have to look at the relational side. How are you feeling with your partner, right? Do you feel like there is an unfair division of labor? Are you building up contempt and resentment? If you don't look at those things, there's no technique, there's no pill, there's no diet, there's no toy that can address that. You've got to look at it in your own specific scenario and speak up for what you want. Now, relationships are so complex. You can't expect your partner to fulfill all of your needs. So you have to decide, okay, what is the need that I have, and where can I source out fulfillment from myself, from friends, from community, from, you know, work, from not just from your partner. And those are big conversations to have. So this is a lot to say, oh, well, how do I get my libido back? Okay, yeah, okay, working out might help. Changing your diet might help. But really, I see it more as behavioral, attitudinal, relational. And then, of course, sexual, right? Why would you want to have sex if it's only 50% satisfying for you, or if it feels like a chore? And I mean, I think we also have to make choices. I think we have to remember that in the West, with all the privilege with which most of us live, we have more choices than most people. So I've relocated back down to Jamaica, where my family's from. And most folks living on this island do not have the same choices that Canadians or Americans or like foreigners like me have. And so we have to say, you know what? When I say I don't have time, I think maybe we need to reconsider I'm not choosing to make the time, right? So I always say, if Oprah called me tomorrow and said she needed 48 hours straight with me, I'd clear my schedule because I would make the time, right? That would be, you know, Michelle Obama calls me, same thing.
You're there.
Somebody else calls me and maybe not. So when we say we don't have time, oftentimes I think we have to remember that we're not making the time. And I'm not suggesting that you're not busy, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, the kids and the family and all these other obligations and work aren't taking away from your own time, but we also have to make those options and say, or make those choices and say, does sex matter to me? And maybe sex doesn't matter to you, but maybe sex matters in your relationship. Here's the reality. You can't decide to set a standard and expect a monogamous partner to meet you at your level. You have to find some middle ground. So then this brings us into other important conversations. Like, for example, sexual frequency. How often do you want it? How often do they want it? And how do you navigate that conversation? I often recommend that you take a piece of paper, and on that piece of paper, you write down how often you want to have sex. Draw a line, and down below, write down how often you think your partner wants to have sex. Have them do the same thing, exchange papers, facilitate a conversation. And I also have a podcast on sexual frequency. You can go listen to my husband and I and our concerns and our struggles, and also what the data says and these different opportunities you have to facilitate these important conversations. Now, if I want sex 5 times a week and my partner wants sex 1 time a week, it doesn't mean we meet exactly in the middle at 2.5. Because who's going to get the 0.5, right? I'm taking the 0.5. I'm taking the extra orgasm.
Yes, you are.
But what can we do to ensure that we're both feeling fulfilled? Because if you sign up for a relationship that is sexual in nature, and especially, you know, when we're talking about couples who want to be monogamous, we do have a motivation to ensure that we're both feeling respected and honored and fulfilled. And that doesn't mean that every time my partner wants sex, I have to have it. I obviously deserve to feel free from pressure, but so too should they feel free from pressure to abstain, right? I can't just decide unilaterally, you know what? We're married. We've been married like 19 or been together 19 years, my husband and I no longer want sex. That if I make that decision on my own, what am I saying to them? That they too have to abstain from sex? And I know these are really sticky, tricky conversations, but they're important ones. And I would say that most of us are avoiding them. Right? We distract ourselves with work, with kids, with other things. And I want to be really clear. Sex doesn't have to be super important to you. You don't have to have a lot of sex life. You don't have to have all the sex. You don't even have to have sex frequently. But if you're in a relationship, you have to have reflection and conversations around these topics, or you're going to arrive at an impasse inevitably if you don't have these conversations.
I think what you mentioned about frequency is so important, because I also, you know, in the space of moms, there's so much comparison. So a couple of the questions that I got were around, what's the normal amount of frequency to have sex, right? And I think that's a hard thing to answer, because I don't think that there is any normal, and you speak to it really well. The paper idea, I think, is phenomenal. But it's like, how would you take that when people ask you, what's the normal amount of frequency to have sex? Because, you know,
well, first and foremost, I'd say we do have data on how frequently people have sex. I don't know how accurate it is, because I think most people lie to themselves. And so we lie to the researchers. Yeah. You know, we do have some data suggesting that the most common response among North Americans in their, I think, early 40s with kids is that they have sex several times a month to weekly. So we're talking 2 to 4 times a month. I would say that for some people that sounds really low, for some people that sounds extremely high. You know, I don't mind talking about averages, but they're really irrelevant. It's sort of like, you know, how many chicken wings am I going to have for lunch? Well, it depends how much I had for breakfast versus what you had for breakfast. It depends whether or not I like chicken. It depends on whether it's spicy. So the number of chicken wings that I have at lunch is irrelevant to the number of chicken wings you might like at lunch. You might be a vegan, right? So then you want 0 chicken wings. So I think it's really important that we really focus on our own needs, focus on pleasure and quality as opposed to quantity and frequency. I'm not saying frequency doesn't matter. Again, we have data suggesting that when we increase frequency from once per month to once per week, it is the happiness equivalent bonus of $10,000. And I think that's US dollars for the Canadians. So we're like, I don't know, 13,000.
It's a lot of money in Canada.
Yes. And we also have data suggesting that the more frequently people have sex, the happier they are in their relationship and they have higher life satisfaction. But that relationship between sexual frequency and relationship satisfaction is what we call curvilinear, which means that it maxes out at a certain point. Mm. So more sex, more happiness, more sex, more happiness. But once you go beyond sex once per week, you're not seeing that happiness correlation rise in tandem with sexual frequency increasing. So does that mean that once a week is a magic number? No, but it's, you know, something that maybe we want to consider. And again, sex does not just happen. You don't go to the gym by accident. You don't, you know, develop a skill or finish a program or get a certificate or learn to skate or learn, you know, get really good at something by accident. You do, it gets better, or you do it because you've invested in it. And so I think that investing in your intimate relationships, not just in sex, is just, it's super important. And having these conversations that are uncomfortable tends to lead to better understanding, more closeness, and that for many people lays the foundation for more frequent sex. And then the other really important piece I think we need to mention is that when we go back to your core erotic feeling, sometimes we forget that for many of us, we need some excitement. We need some risk. We need some challenge. We need things to be subversive. And in North American and Western cultures, we spend so much time and energy trying to get comfortable in our relationships that we don't leave enough space for risk. We're always trying to make everything perfect. And perfection, first of all, is unattainable, but also it's not exciting for many of us. You know, I can speak for myself that, you know, I love my husband. He's like so absurdly good to me and such an incredible human being. And that feels really good. Like I wouldn't trade my life for anybody's, knock on wood. Like I just feel super grateful. And at the same time, that's not a huge turn on for me. Like I need a little bit of, I need risk. Like I'm a high risk person. I like a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. So we need to inject opportunities to do things that feel uncomfortable together. Just that comfort and love and trust and safety doesn't work for me. For other people, that's exactly what they're looking for. And that's why exploring your own core erotic feeling is so important. It's sort of like the five languages of love, but I would say a lot more nuanced, less rooted in religion. And I try and leave more space for nuance, for individual variation. Like people always say, oh, can you, cause the, you know, they want me to write more about it. Can you put it into buckets? And I'm like, I could, but I don't want to oversimplify it, right? If somebody's core erotic, you know, some people are turned on by being jealous. Some people get in the mood. Like if you look at a couple, oftentimes you'll find that one partner gets in the mood because they're stressed out, because sex is a source of stress relief. And the other person loses all interest in sex when they're stressed out, which is, you know, what we've seen throughout 2020 and the beginning of 2021 mm-hmm. with the situation under which we're living. We have heightened rates of stress. It's not going to go down by the end of 2021 when we look at, you know, the projections for vaccinations, the mutation of the virus. So all of these stressful components for some of us put us in the mood, and for some of us detract from mood. And if we don't talk in, you know, clear language about what we're feeling, that's when we run into trouble and we end up not understanding our own needs and our partners.
I want to take a quick minute for this season's podcast sponsor, Bathorium. I was so excited when they agreed to sign up to be this season's podcast sponsor because I have been a huge fan since COVID started. And even more interestingly, I wasn't a bath fan before I started using their products. I didn't like the idea of having to sit still and take a bath. And now through COVID, it is the only time that I can and only way that I find I'm able to decompress and take a moment to myself. My favorite are the bath soaks. They're so, so wonderful. And I get out feeling smooth and relaxed and amazing. And they've decided to give you guys 15% off on everything on their website. All you need to do to get the code and get access to that discount is go to mumbreak.ca/bath. I'm super excited to support this Canadian company who make all of their vegan and ethically produced products in Canada. I even love talking to the marketing manager, who's an Ottawa mom, who is a wonderful human being. So super excited about this podcast sponsor. Go check out their stuff, mumbreak.ca/bath, to get 15% off.
No, I love that because I think it relieves some guilt on moms in that it's not this quick, easy fix that someone just is choosing not to do, right? It's a nuanced approach and it takes time and energy. And I love your analogy about going to the gym. It's not something that just happens. We've worked at it. We've chosen to do it. It's the same as sex. It's people, all these moms feeling bad that they're not having sex when it's not just something that happens. And I think that's important to that message is so important.
You did mention about quality over quantity. So let's talk about orgasms. And I know that you'd mentioned that it's not all the be all and end all, but I think for me personally, it is.
Yeah.
And it's important to me. And I think it also is important to a lot of other people. So what about those women who are struggling to orgasm, who aren't having them regularly? Let's just talk about it from a high level. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So I think that one kind of a simple way to approach orgasm is to tune into pleasure. And that usually involves presence and mindfulness. So I actually do have a course online called Mindful Sex, which really isn't about sex. We eventually get there, but it's really about learning to be more in the moment, breathing, visualizing, understanding emotional presence, learning to receive pleasure. A lot of women can't orgasm because, you know, we've received so many messages that sex is performative, that sex is shameful, that we aren't entitled to feel what we feel in our body, right? And in the absence of comprehensive sex education, our only model for what sex looks and sounds like is pornography. And pornography can be fun, it can be hot, it can be titillating, but it's not intended as education, right? In pornography, they're always jumping up and down, making their ooh, ooh, ee, ee, ooh, ooh, ee, chimpanzee noises. But in real life, we might want to let out like a grunt. So we hold that back because it seems so unnatural when in fact it's the most, it could be the most natural thing for you. And so this mindfulness piece and being willing to just be in your body and receive pleasure. The first physical exercise in my course is a hand caress. And you just have to have your partner caress your hand for pleasure for a couple of minutes. And many people can't get through that. And I'm like, well, if you can't get through having your hand caressed, receiving pleasure for 5 minutes, how are you going to let your partner go down on you? How are you going to give yourself permission to tune into your pleasure instead of worrying about what your partner is thinking? How are you going to avoid spectatoring? So many people struggle to orgasm with a partner because they're distracted, because they're not feeling present, because they're worried about what they look like, because they're worried about what their partner is thinking. And that's why I created this Mindful Sex video course. And it's a bunch of audio files as well, so that people can just make mindfulness more of an overall practice and then integrate it into the pleasure components in their bedroom.
I love that so much because, yeah, 100%. It's the grocery list and it's the things to do and it's the mess and it's the body issues and it's all of the things that as women, we have a hard time turning off our brains literally every moment of the day, right?
And exactly. Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So is there anything else you want to add to the people online? You have so many amazing resources and you have so many amazing courses and you do all of the things. Where should people start? Where should people look?
I mean, for me, I would say have a listen to the Sex with Dr. Jess podcast. It's not all about sex. It's about many things around relationships, communication, emotional literacy, you know, even how politics and oppression comes into play and affects the way we feel about ourselves as women of color, as queer women. So I definitely think that's a great place to start. But if you do want to do something for yourself, I do think that investing, it's not a big financial investment, but investing the time in something like our Mindful Sex course can be really valuable. It's at happiercouples.com, even though I'm at sexwithdrjess.com. You'll find the Mindful Sex course at happiercouples.com as we do the rebrand.
Amazing. And I love that you do it with your partner too. I think that it's so cool to get that perspective. It's always interesting to hear the different sides of things in relationships as well. And it's hard not to compare, but when you see it through the lens of another couple, it's refreshing.
Yeah. And that's actually, you brought that up earlier, this comparison. And you're right. We do that. It's like whether, you know, it's where your kids are at in terms of milestones or what we look like or what you earn or where you live or how many orgasms you're having or how frequently you're having sex. But those quantitative comparisons don't reflect fulfillment at all. Right? I can tell you from really having worked with thousands and thousands of couples, some people are super fulfilled with sex once a month, and some people have terrible relationships with sex 3 times a week. Yeah. So, I mean, really any of these things that you can count don't necessarily add up to a happier relationship or a happier life. And what I want to really leave people with is, you know, it's okay wherever you are. And if you want to make changes, you can make changes right now. right? So for example, if you find you're not in the mood for sex, but you want to be in the mood for sex, again, I really want to highlight that if you're not in the mood and you don't want to be in the mood, that's okay. But if you're not in the mood and you want to get in the mood, you can do something right now, right? Like you can go into the shower and play with the shower head right now. You can go online and kind of maybe order a toy. You can go to a website. There's a website called Femtasy that has audio recordings and see if any of those kind of strike your fancy. You can check out one of my online courses. You can even just turn to your partner and change the way you talk to them right now, right? Like there's nothing that stops you from being, other than yourself, from being more loving in this moment or being more affectionate, or more importantly for many of us, asking for what you want. To say, you know what, like I know maybe I've seemed really angry lately, but I'm feeling frustrated because I don't feel like you're carrying your weight. And this is a boundary I need to draw right now. Like there's nothing that stops us from having those conversations. And I will hear excuses, oh, my partner doesn't listen, or my partner this or that, but you just have no control over your partner's behavior, but you can ask them to engage in new conversations. And I think most of us, we make the mistake of accusing and complaining instead of asking for what we want. So I always kind of say, can you consider this three-part approach where you start with the positive, you make an inquiry, and then you make your request. So if you feel as though, I'm just going to give an example, they're only intimate with you when they want sex, right? They're never affectionate other than in bed when they're trying to like poke you from behind or do the reach around. Can you go with something positive? Like, you know, it felt really good when we connected physically last week or last month, or it felt really good last Sunday. And then your inquiry is, you know, how did it feel for you? And then your request is, you know, I feel so close to you when you hold me on the couch or when you kiss and snuggle me. I'd love if, you know, we could take 2 minutes in the morning since we're all maybe working from home right now and just hold each other and be really specific in that request, as opposed to saying like, you never touch me, or I want you to be more affectionate. Okay. You have every right to ask for more affection, but can you be specific about what it is you want? Because all of the language of affection, of sex, of monogamy, they all mean different things to different people. And we have a wealth of data to back this up. So you tend to have to make requests with specificity and give people a reason, right? So if I say, you know, I want you to hug me more, my partner might just, you know, tell themselves a story. Oh, I don't do enough for her. It's never enough. Or, you know, I'm not a good enough partner, or she doesn't feel the same way about me. Whereas if I said, it feels so good when you hug me, does this feel good for you? I'd love if before you head off to work, I just got like a 20-second hug to feel connected to you, right? Like that language is very different than how most of us, myself included, okay? Mm-hmm. Like I have the tools, I don't always use them. like I'm human. Yeah. And so I screw up all the time. And that's another big thing in relationships, being able to say mea culpa. Like I screwed up, I'm in the wrong. I had to do that this morning with my partner because I get really cranky when we're, not cranky, but I get really snipey. That's, yep. So it's worse than cranky. When we're doing the podcast and it's like not set up the way I want it set up.
Mm, yeah, you need your space.
Yeah. And then I could see that he was feeling nervous this morning, and I asked him what's up, and we're using this new platform, and he was basically nervous that I was going to be upset. And so we had to kind of talk that out, and I had to say, you know what? I realized that in the moment I get snipey and I need to watch myself. Right. And so even though I've done it 100 times, maybe on this 101st time, I'm going to be different and I'm going to kind of catch myself. And so that's the good news, is anything you've done wrong or anything you've done in a way that you regret in the past, you can change it right now. That's my goal today. I'm not going to be snipey when he sets up for my podcast today.
Such a good goal. I think we can all agree that we all do. I'll do that too with my partner. That's the point. I'll be a kind wife today. Oh my goodness. And so one more time, where can people find you online? They need to go find you right now.
You can find me on social media at Sex with Dr. Jess, and all the courses are at happiercouples.com. And of course, the Sex with Dr. Jess podcast on all podcast platforms.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.